Session number 6131, Reel 5.
Commander Dredge, Reel 5.
Well, I even got up to Addis Ababa for the coronation of Rastafari, the king of the kings of Ethiopia and conquering lion of Judah. It began in a rather amusing way, because they wanted to have a big show for him. It's an unheard of, unknown country, you see. In fact, really, all we knew about it was that it were, the Queen of Sheba met her young man. But as soon as he said they wanted a Royal Marine Band, naturally the Admiral said, if my Marine Band goes, I go too. And so that's how we got into it. And then, of course, they sent out invitations. Every country in the world accepted and sent a huge deputation to get in and on the free champagne and free eats. And so we had a very large mixed party up there, and rather more than the Abyssinians catered for or could organize. It was all great fun.
What impressions did you get of Addis Ababa?
It's a little savage town on top of a hill. I can't really say more than that.
Can you describe what the coronation was like?
Yes, it went on from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and nothing to eat, except an old French, great old French marshal there, Marshal Franchet d'Esperey, who had a hollow field marshal baton, which he'd filled with little round biscuits. And while sure, you saw him quietly eating these biscuits throughout the meeting. We had a very good royal prince, Duke Gloucester, who was very good about it all and took the whole thing as a really in his stride.
Which year was this, 1930?
Yes.
Can you say a little bit more about your period on the Effingham?
Well, I was mostly occupied in preparing the passage of the Grand Fleet to the Far East in the event of war with Japan. Of course, like most things we prepare for, it never happened. We'll be also at war with Germany, and we simply don't move our fleet out of home waters.
What did these preparations involve?
Well, plans for anchoring ships in different harbours, above all supplies of food, which are very, very hard to get, and organising local Royal Naval Volunteer Reserve forces. It's all fairly hypothetical, but it had to be done before, and of course the preparation of a war plan.
Was it easy to organise these volunteer forces?
Yes, they were people were very helpful and very popular. Sometimes, of course, it went a bit too far. In Ceylon, for instance, there were a great many old ex-naval officers, tea planting and coffee planting and so on. And some of them a bit wild. They haven't got them all on board. And they then held a lunch party in the captain's cabin. I'd go through a formality, asking if they could do so. He put my number, but luckily it was very nice to have it, took it as a joke.
Was the route that the fleet would take to the Far East via the Cape or via Suez?
Oh, Suez. But we had to also prepare for the Cape in case Suez was closed to us, which could easily have been.
In 1926-27, I think that you were lieutenant commander on the battlecruiser Renown. Can you tell me what work you were doing with her?
Now, wait a minute. I've got to think of... We'll just stop the thing. I don't got, we were taking the Duke of York and the Queen and the future Queen and Queen Mother out to Australia to open the Federal House of Parliament at Canberra. So it's a very festive occasion, and we had a lot of fun all the way, and a great time in Australia. I'm very fond of the Australians. I've been with them in Gallipoli, you see, and so I already had a contact with them.
Can you tell me a little bit about that world cruise in detail?
Well, the strange thing, we went through a Suez Canal and we stopped at Fiji, where we had the most impressive parade of the Fiji armed forces. And then to Sydney, and finally on to Melbourne, where we went up to Canberra for all the ceremonies. We had a very good time with the Australians, who enjoyed it very much, and made many friends out there.
Yeah. You were serving as a naval officer at the time when the government cut naval pay,
yes,
leading to the Invergordon Mutiny. Can you tell me what you remember of that, please?
Oh, a great deal, yes. It was inevitable. The lower deck spent the weekend with pencil and paper. I remember the queue outside my cabin, working out how they couldn't afford to feed their families. And having decided they couldn't afford to feed them, they mutinied. It's as simple as that. All we could do, we weren't warned about it. There was no warning from the Admiralty. They were hopelessly ineffective board. And all we could do was try and contain the mutiny and keep it on reasonably peaceful conditions.
Where were you serving yourself at the time?
In the Valiant.
And where was she actually stationed?
In the Home Fleet.
You were actually at Invergordon yourself,
yes,
weren't you?
Yes, I was at Invergordon. That's where it all happened. It was quite inevitable.
Where did the... can you tell me anything about the leaders of the mutiny?
Yes, they are mostly rather vain, talkative men who were very scared by what they'd done. There was no sort of grim picture, no sort of mutiny of Mr. Christian or anything. They were just sort of loud mouths, really. But it's very easy for them, because I'd say, but nothing could do but mutiny. The only as I saw it, only option open to him.
Was it completely passive, or was there any violence?
Oh, no, completely passive.
Did the officers at the time feel sympathy with the men?
Oh, complete sympathy, yes.
Did they show that sympathy, or did they conceal it?
Well, when you were consulted by the men in Spain, you tried to help them over the bay. They must have then realised our feelings about it.
Did the officers address the men when they mutinied?
Yes, I tried to get them back to work, and they always said, "But look, sir, we can't feed our families. So what can we do?" It's an impasse. I urged them to go back to work, but I knew it was quite useless.
Did any troops arrive to deal with the mutiny?
No, nothing like that.
So how was it stopped?
Well, though, we got the men to go back to work. The demands for reduction in pay reduced to be kept at 10% were conceded, and President of the Fleet sailed.
Who was the leader on your own ship?
Well, I don't act. A chap called Copeman claimed to be, but I very much doubt it. He wasn't a strong character. I strongly suspect the men were organising behind it. We never got to know at all.
But was this Copeman the spokesman?
Yes, he was, if you like, a spokesman. Yes, he's a very frightened man. He's a great physical card. It's really mostly in the book about Invergordon, you know, and my comments on it.
How could you tell that they were so frightened about what they'd done?
Well, by their manner. And by the way, they came back to see me afterwards and asked what I could do for them and so on. The word mutiny was a very emotive word.
Were the men threatened with consequences by the officers?
No, the atmosphere wasn't like that. It's rather hard to describe it. They were threatened with being called mutineers, to which they applied, "We aren't mutineers, sir," and so on. It was all very, very low key.
What did they say they were if they weren't mutinous?
Oh, strikers, if you like. If you pressed them, yes, well, I'd strike. We just had a general strike not very long before, you see.
Was there any attempt to make contact with other parts of the fleet by the mutineers?
Well, no, the whole fleet had mutinied, you see. The fleet at Invergore didn't sail on exercise, on Monday morning exercises.
Was there a strike committee or mutineers committee on board your ship?
No, I think it's really all spontaneous. Obviously, of course, the leaders tried to get together. But the whole thing was simply a spontaneous movement by the men, as I say, who found they couldn't afford to feed their families.
How soon after they received the news of the cuts did they mutiny?
Well, over the weekend, the cuts were published by a member on Saturday, and on the Monday, well, the mutiny came when the fleet had to sail, you see. That wasn't an effective reason, actually. Simply when the fleet had to sail.
Were the mutineers carrying out any duties aboard ship?
No. The ship was kept clean, but no other work was done.
So they carried out cleaning duties, yes, aboard the ship?
And, of course, all the officers' meals and things like that. Your baths ran on and so on.
Did there seem to be a change in attitude amongst the men, as far as you could see?
Not very much, no.
Were there any officers who didn't sympathise with the mutiny, who opposed it?
I never knew. We had a captain of marines who wanted to put on a sword and pistol and go on the mess deck and drive them out. But he's advised not to do it at all.